You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome back to Locked On Cavaliers. I'm Chris Manning, your host and the site manager over at FearTheSword.com. Joining me today is one of the writers with me over at Fear the Sword, is Jackson Flickinger. You can find him on Twitter at @Akron_Jackson. Hey, Jackson, what's going on, man?
Nothing much. How's it going?
It's going. I'm ready for basketball to be back. We're in September. Today I caught the end of the Turkey USA game. I don't know if you saw that or saw the highlights, but Jetty Osmond was doing some stuff, and that got me a little I'm ready. So I'm ready for this to be back. I don't know if you're ready, or if your sleep schedule's ready, or if your kind of life flow is not ready for basketball to be back. But I'm 95% of the way there.
My sleep schedule is not ready to watch West Coast games, which is what I'm really interested in this year with, AD on the Lakers, Russell Westbrook going out to Houston. You know, I'm really excited about how the Western Conference is really going to shake out. But yeah, my sleep schedule is not quite ready for that. But yeah, I'm ready to go. I wish I could have saw the USA Turkey game today, but I don't have ESPN Plus and it was on at 9 a.m. But I did see that Chetty post move, and that's something that he hinted at a little bit kind of after the All-Star break, but never really explored. So that has me intrigued, to say the least.
We're gonna get into Jetty. This is gonna be a two-part pod with with Jackson. We're gonna do six things, three from each of us, on what we're going to look for in this upcoming cap season. One of mine is Jetty. We'll get to him. I don't know on which show. It'll be there today or tomorrow. But Jackson, I'm gonna cue you up first. Give me one thing of your three that I had you prepare that you are looking forward to getting into, and we'll kind of riff on that for a little bit.
Okay, so one of the things that I think will define the Cavs season is the health of Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson. And, most of this season, the Cavs aren't going to be going into the season with aspirations to even sniff out a playoff spot. And it's really important to see how the young guys develop. But I think a crucial part of that is having Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson on the court. There were so many times last year where it felt like Colin Sexton was out there and he wasn't really learning anything because he's out there playing with, no disrespect for some of the guys who were on the Cavs roster in, December, January, and February. But he was playing with guys who either were on the fringe of not being in the NBA or didn't really have anything to play for in Cleveland. And that kind of led to some disjointed play by, disjointed play by Colin Sexton, a lot of frustration for fans. And when you were able to see him play with Kevin Love and or Tristan Thompson, he was still really rough around the edges, to say the least. But at least when you have those guys out there, there is a level of competency that isn't there without them. Tristan and Kevin are going to be in the right places on both sides of the floor. They're going to know how to kind of get things going. And, that baseline of really just knowing what you're doing on the floor will really help Sexton and the rest of the young guys this year. And having them out there is really important, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you're right. Just to first some data on this. So last year, looking at the two-man lineup combinations for Colin Sexton, Tristan Thompson was his fifth most common one at 833 minutes. Ahead of that was Jetty, then Larry Nance, then Clarkson, and then Rodney Hood, which tells you a little bit about the Cavs season, considering Rodney Hood was dealt at the deadline. And then Kevin Love was ninth. Of course, that's skewed only 455 minutes because of the amount of time Kevin spent injured. It's kind of surprising almost that they got that many minutes out of those two together, which is kind of, I think, something I'm looking forward to seeing how they might mesh a little bit more, especially in a more designed system. The numbers on either of these they're not good, but I don't think, Kevin, they're negative 5.2 per 100 possessions with them as a duo. Tristan, they're negative 17.8. I don't really put a ton of stock into those just because of how bad the Cavs were overall. If you look at like any of the five-man lineups, which, you know, I think using that data can get you into some weird spots, like there's just going to be some bad lineups that he used a bunch. Like the most common five-man lineup for the Cavs last year, and this tells you a little bit about the season, is it was like Knight, Love, Osmond, Sexton. That was the most common five-man lineup for Colin Sexton. That's like a weird lineup and like a hodgepodge of stuff, and I don't quite know what to really do with that. And there are lineups, and you know, coincidentally, that have Thompson and Sexton together that are positives or close to being positive. So it's hard for me to like evaluate from a data perspective, like if there's anything negative there. But so I just agree with that. Like having those two guys healthy and around is only going to help Jetty. It's only going to help Sexton. It's only going to help Darius Garland and Kevin Porter Jr. And Dylan Windler and Dean Wade when he's around up on a two-way deal. Like I think one of the underreported things from last year, and this is on me, this is on, I think, just sort of the weird way that the Cavs recovered last year as a whole, is like Tristan was like, I think even though he obviously would rather compete for titles and compete in the playoffs, that dude was the leader of that locker room, I think, last year. Was very vocal, was very kind of helping these guys get acclimated. Dele provided some of that same thing once he came over from Milwaukee. And I think as long as those guys are like around and engaged, that's only going to help those guys. If you had to pick one, and I think the answer is probably obvious, but is there one of these guys that you would say their health is more important for the bottom line for the Cavs this year?
I mean, I would obviously, it's Kevin Love. He's the better player. I think the development on the offensive end is much more important for Sexton and Garland this coming up year. Not saying that the defensive end isn't important. It's very important, but for this coming up year, I would like to see how they kind of mesh together on offense. And I think Kevin Love is more important in that role. But I don't want to undersell Tristan's ability to be in the right spots. And he knows how to create space for shooters. And that can only help guys like, you know, Garland and Ben. So I really would like to see, in an ideal world, I'd like to see both of them on the floor. But at least having one of them on the floor for like most of the games, like at least 70 games, that would just goes a very long way in helping us evaluate what we have in all these young guys.
Yeah, I think Tristan's like not as valuable. I think Kevin's going to, just because of his offensive ability, it's going to just matter so much more. But I think with Tristan, he sets such good screens. He is going to crash the offensive glass. He's going to do stuff that Kevin, I think, by design of the offense and just what he does, is just not going to do. And I'm kind of curious to see just how Tristan could kind of impact these things in a positive way. And like, I wonder if, like, I don't quite know what the best pairings for the Cavs are. You know, I don't think this roster is built for them to play small, frankly. I don't know how that meshes with what Beeling wants to do. These are questions we need to see answered before I can kind of say, and I think asking him about this immediate day in a couple of weeks will be kind of worth doing. When I look at what's going on with Tristan and Love, that's historically been a good pairing when they're together, you know, dating back to the title run and everything. I wonder if like it makes sense just to start them and try to, you know, get them on the floor with the young guys as much as possible as a duo, to kind of help bring them along. I don't know, you know, Nance can do some stuff and whatever, but I wonder if leaning on them as a duo also makes some sense. I wonder if that just fits in what Beeline wants to do. You know, is it going to be like is Kevin going to be a spacer? Is he going to be the five? Like, there are just questions about his view of the bigs that I don't know. And I'd be curious to see how he actually implements these things. But, you know, I wonder, again, if leaning on these two together, just because they've been good in the past, you can trust them, it gives you some stability on both ends of the floor behind what is going to be a porous backcourt duo if they do start together at any point in the year. I wonder if that's just something that has to at least be explored for 10 games or something like that, even if it doesn't ultimately work out.
I couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, when you look at this roster, there isn't really many known, you know, there are so many variables with this roster. And the two things that you do know is, you know what Tristan's going to give you and you know what Kevin's going to give you when they're on the floor and healthy. So, you know, just kind of going off of that, that's reason enough for me to start both of them together, at least for the start.
Yeah, I think you could go. I don't know if I have a huge preference between Nance and Thompson, but I think right now I would probably just lean Thompson, just because I think Nance, with his passing ability, is going to could provide something on the second unit that could be needed that just maybe doesn't get maximized as much, assuming that's real, with the starting lineup. All right, we're going to take a quick break, And then we're going to be back with more Locked On Cavaliers with myself and Jackson Flickinger. If you aren't already, check out Locked On Browns. Jeff Lloyd is covering the Cleveland Browns, just cranking out insane podcasts with Pete Smith oftentimes. And you're going to want to get his insight on the Cleveland Browns. They're back on this upcoming Sunday. I'm sure if you're a Cavs fan, there's a good chance you're a Browns fan too. So go check out that podcast and find that wherever you get your podcasts, like Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, the new Himalaya podcast app, wherever you get your shows. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. Jackson Flickinger here with me talking about different questions. Jackson, my first question about this season is something I talked about a little bit on a Fearless War Pod recently. It's something that I talked about with Jeff Siegel yesterday. So I'm going to like ask you this, and I'm just going to curious to see what your response to this is. What the heck are the Cavs going to do on defense? I just have no idea how they're going to do anything that resembles competency. I don't know how they're going to do stuff that is really going to make them passable or workable or like have any sort of value on that end of the floor. They don't have the personnel. They have Sendarius Thornwell and Tristan and Nance should all be good defenders. Jetty should be better. Delly should be okay if he's healthy. Love can be solid if he's, you know, kind of putting in the effort. We don't know. I don't think he was doing that quite a ton last year, I think that's frankly pretty fair. I just don't know what the F the Cavs are supposed to do in that end of the floor. I just don't know if there's a way that they can be good or passable. I wonder if they're worse than we were last year. Where are you at on that?
It kind of depends on what your definition of passable is.
My definition is like, can they, like, at least a couple times a game string together a couple stops in a row and, like, at least, like, have a chance to be competitive in some games and at least have the ability to get some stops when they need them to against, like, non-elite offenses?
I think they could have some stretches like that. I mean, I was thinking about this earlier today because I was listening to your pod a couple of days ago with Jeff Siegel about defense. And, you know, like, the best possible scenario that I could think of is, like, if everything went perfectly right, I think they could have, like, the 27th best defense, you know? So it's like, they simply don't have the personnel to do it. They have no wings. They didn't address the issue of lack of 3/4 defenders. Like, one of their biggest problems last year. They didn't really do anything to address it. They lost their best defender, you know? So it's like the defensive end of the floor is going to be really rough, but I do think there's a path for them to be at least better, maybe better than what they were last year. And, you know, it's one of the things that, you know, fans always love to say is, you know, whenever they can't exactly pinpoint why something is wrong with the team or why something isn't meeting their expectations, they just blame the coaches. And, you know, as people from the outside who aren't in the locker room, it is really hard to kind of say what issues are the coaching staff's fault and what issues are the players' fault. But really, when it comes to the defensive end of the floor, the Cavs don't have the personnel, but they were definitely not put in a position to succeed, in my opinion. There were so many times last year where it just felt like the five guys on the floor were not in sync in any type of way. You know, Sexton, I don't know how many times I saw Sexton trying to fight through screens or under screens when there was already help there. And, you know, there's just guys wide open all the time. It just took two or three passes to just completely break down that defense, you know. And yes, all of that starts with bad, you know, with bad defense at the point of attack, but also that comes down to guys really not knowing what they're supposed to do on defense. And I'm hoping Beilein can at least get some type of system or vision or goal on defense.
So I think you're right about sort of knowing. It's hard to sort of parse these things. I don't know what the scheme was. Like, if you look at good defensive teams, like, they have sets of principles. I don't know enough, frankly. I think NBA defense is the hardest thing for us to evaluate. There's not enough I think, data that tells us enough. There's not an, like, it's just hard to know some of the intricacies. Like, authentic, it becomes easier to pick out. Like, talent can kind of win sometimes. And unless it's, like, a great one-on-one play, I do think defense, that's a blind spot for me. I will just readily admit that, like, I don't know enough to sort of evaluate everything that kind of goes wrong when it goes wrong. That being said, like, I think it's just very plainly clear, like, individually, the Cavs just don't have, like, very many good defenders. And that's sort of, like, where my... That's sort of where my sort of issue really comes, because it's just like I look at the roster and it's like, okay, the 13 guys that we sort of are pretty much sure are going to be on the roster. You know, it's the guys you would sort of expect. So it's, you know, all the expirings. So it's right now, it's Love, Tristan, Knight, Clarkson, Nance, Henson, Delly, Garland, Sexton, Jetty, Zizic, Windler, and KPJ. You have Sindarius Thornwell, who is going to be on I don't think his deal is 100% guaranteed for next year, as far as I understand. You have Bolden, Malik Newman, Levi Randolph, and JP McCura and Jarrell Martin, all kind of that should be in camp. Some of those numbers might kind of dip down. They're going to carry 14 guys. Let's just like say, like, for whatever reason, I would be surprised if he doesn't make the roster, but let's just say Sindarius does not make the team, okay? Like, they don't have a good... He'd be their best wing defender immediately. So, like, if he's not on the team, like, Jetty has to just defend opposing wings every night. And, like, I'm a believer in Jetty. I do not think that even if he can become a passable defensive player, and I think his defensive RPM, for example, is kind of blown up by some of the situations he's put in and just kind of... him just being on overall, like, there's a lot of factors that I think contribute to that aren't all his fault. I just, like, don't, like, believe that he's gonna, like, be best served doing stuff like having to guard Kawhi Leonard or Giannis every night.
I couldn't agree more. You know, the personnel isn't there to be a good defense or, you know, an average defense, but it feels like they could be were last year. You know, I just want to see guys in the right spot. I want to see, you know, I'm okay. Like, Sexton is not, I think he can become a good defender, but he's not a good defender right now. And it's unreasonable with his body currently, as he's not matured and developed. You know, it's unreasonable to think that he's going to be able to, you know, stand toe to toe with opposing point guards, you know, who are much bigger and stronger than him. But I want to see him in the right position. I want to see everybody, you know, in the right position on defense so that maybe they could succeed, you know, and I didn't see that at all last year. And I'm hoping, maybe I'm putting too much faith in Beeline, but I think that they, you know, with good coaching, with the coaching staff that's fully invested and bought in, maybe we could see some type of plan on defense and see guys actually in the right spot. You know, but yeah, at the end of the day, they really don't have the guys. You just run down the roster and, you know, like, Tristan Thompson was a good defender, but is he still a good defender for his position? You know, Larry Nance Jr. has, you know, runs into foul trouble, you know, and those are like the only guys on the entire roster that even jump out as being, you know, average to good defenders. And that's, you know, that's not a recipe for success by any means.
What to you would be the best Cavs defensive lineup? If I had to say, like, okay, I need you to get one stop, but just build a lineup to do it, what is it? There's a reason I'm asking you this. There's a thought exercise here.
I mean, I would go Delly's in it, Nance and Thompson are in it. I'd go Thornwell and Jetty. So that'd be my best defensive one, but yeah, you can't really play that because it would just be a train wreck on the other end.
You literally could. I don't know how you're scoring buckets with that. That's like my point. It's just like, if the Cavs like ever try to tilt, and I don't think it's in Beeline's character to try to tilt that way either. Like, what do we do? You know what I mean? It's just like, what are we doing if like that, if you're going to tilt that far in one direction? Like, I just, it's not going to serve them and it's not going to play to Beeline's strength. So I just don't know. I just would say, like, I'm not, my breath is held waiting for them. I would die if I was holding my breath waiting for them to be good on defense. And again, I just, that's not the, from everything I know about Beilein, like, it's not that he doesn't care about offense, but like, or not doesn't care about defense, but like offense is like what he's enamored with. So I think that's going to be where we see kind of his imprint more than anything else. And that's why I think like what JB Bickerstaff's role is will be really interesting to see how that sort of plays out, because I think he comes in kind of more defensive minded than and Antonio Lang too, coming from Utah, which has had a very good defense the last couple of years, I think will be worth watching. All right, we're going to take one more break for this episode, and then we're going to be back to talk about one last question on Jackson's list. Again, subscribe to this podcast wherever you get podcasts. That includes Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or Megaphone. Just get your Lockdown Cavs fix, get all the Lockdown Network in those places, and make sure you're subscribing, because we're going to be ramping up our shows here as we get closer and closer to the season. And there's more and more to talk about and some cool interviews on the way too. We're going to be right back. One. All right, Jackson, give me your last thing for part one of our kind of six things pod here.
Okay. One of the things that I think will make or break the Cavs season is how Kobe Altman manages the cap this year. As we know, the Cavs are in a complete rebuild. Personally, I would like to see, you know, them keep the vets around. You know, by vets, I mean Love and Thompson. I believe one of the biggest problems, you know, when we did this in, you know, after LeBron left the first time, was that, you know, we got rid of everything, and, you know, it was not a conducive environment to bring up young players like Kyrie and Dion. This time around, I believe the Cavs would be better served keeping Love and Thompson, but the Cavs still have plenty of trade assets to move this year outside of Love and Thompson. One of the things that I loved that Kobe did last year is he was able to flip expiring contracts for, you know, a late first and multiple seconds. I'd like to see him do that again this year, you know, because he was able to flip the expiring contracts that he had last year for ones that expire this year. And I would like to see that train keep, you know, going forward. So the Cavs have, there's multiple expiring contracts on the table that can be moved. You know, Thompson's expiring. I don't think that he's going to be moved, but Knight's expiring, Clarkson's expiring, Henson's expiring, Dele's expiring. I would like to see all of those guys moved off the roster by the trade deadline, and hopefully we get some seconds and maybe a late first out of that, and just able to keep this train going. Because, you know, when you are in a rebuild, you need as many shots in the draft as possible. You know, the teams that stay bad forever are the teams that only are taking, you know, their own pick in the draft, and they don't have other teams' picks. You know, you're not going to get anything. You're not going to get a top 10 pick for any of these guys, a top 15 pick, you know, even a top 20 picks to reach. But if you can just accumulate those seconds, we saw in that trade for, you know, Kevin Porter Jr., they were able to cash in some of those seconds for a late first and able to go up and get the guy that they want. And I would like to see them in a position to do that more often, especially in the next couple of years.
So one of the things that I just don't know, and then I'll be very curious to see how it plays out, is looking at this roster and looking at the expiring. So you have Tristan, Knight, Clarkson, John Henson, and Dele. I think trading Dele, like, if this was a different free agency class in 2020, like, I think some of these guys could be super flippable and you could get stuff back and just kind of you know, could be guys that are maybe a little overpaid, but still fit. You could like do some interesting stuff. I'm a little bit wary that the Cavs are in a position to like really capitalize on these, because they're like the 2020 free agency class, especially with someone like Caris LeVert being taken out of it. I just like don't know what it is, and it's a little too early to say that, but teams are going to be doing their research and like kind of figuring some of this out. I'm going to run through some of the names that are going to could theoretically be free agents next summer. So you have Kyle Lowry, who's going to be 34 by that point. Gordon Hayward could decline a player option. Mike Conley could decline a player option. Paul Millsap. You'll have DeMar DeRozan in Otto Porter and Drummond, and all could be declining player options. Anthony Davis could be in the class, but like we know, he's probably going to stay with the Lakers. Hassan Whiteside, LaMarcus Aldridge at 35 will have a non-guarantee. You have Marc Gasol, Nick Batum on a player option, Parsons, Ibaka, Gallinari, Tim Hardaway Jr. on a player option, Bazemore, Tyler Johnson, Goran Dragic. Like, you go down the list, and like, I don't even know how many things there are. Like, I'm like, okay, like, I would want to throw, you know, a big kind of money at some of this guy. Like, you know, you could Bogdan Bogdanovic from Sacramento. Like, I could see him being kind of interesting. You know, I think Kevin will cringe, but like, Jay Crowder might be like worth like a low level thing if you're a good team. The Cavs are not really in that position. Montrezl Harrell will be kind of interesting. Probably doesn't really make any sense for the Cavs. You just go down this list, and like, unless you're like, you know, we'll see what happens with Buddy Hield and some of this other stuff. I do not see much that I'm like, okay, like, it's useful to have money next summer. And that, I don't know what that means for expirings. Like, I think you could talk a team like into Tristan and Henson if he's healthy, and Clarkson as being like title, like help you win to the playoffs. Brandon Knight just screams to me like, okay, like this is a guy you flip to clear cap space, or just like you take the cap space yourself. Ditto for Delly, frankly. And I don't think these, like, I do not think that we're in a position to see the Cavs take back a bunch of bad money for these expirings. And I just wonder what that means for what Altman might be able to do.
I agree with you. One thing that I would point out is that sometimes looking at things like the cap and what teams want to do is really tough, because we are only able to see what teams, like what teams' motivations could be when it comes to a free agent, you know, in the upcoming summer. Like, no, there's not going to be teams that are just moving, you know, unloading bad contracts to get max slots. You know, we're not going to see that this trade deadline. But you never know what some owners may not maybe pressed up against the luxury tax, may want to try to get down, may try to want to make sure that they're, you know, like a little further away from that in the future. So there's a lot of things that can come into play here. And also, you never know when the whole landscape of the NBA is going to change just by one trade request. So, like, yeah, it's much bleaker than it was last year for Altman, in that there's not a bunch of teams looking to get off of contracts, but you can never say never when it comes to, you know, stuff like this.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong. I wonder if the way you kind of approach it is like you pick and choose who you like. I don't know if the Cavs want to I think an ideal world, you're probably like doing a little bit of both, where you're flipping some of these guys, but then you're like just taking the salary cap benefits yourself to some degree. Like, if they weren't able to trade Brandon Knight and just like rolled some caps into the summer, some of which gets eaten up by like a Jetty extension or like a new Tristan Thompson contract or something like that, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. You know, you could still do some 2020 free agency stuff, like, you know, someone like Dwayne Bacon, or like, you know, like maybe you throw a big offer at Buddy Hield if you love him, or like there's stuff you could do that I don't think is the worst idea in the world. Now, do I think all of these are good? No. Do I have some concerns, like, about, you know, do I think you could get in next summer and like overspend and do something a bit silly and like kind of repeat 2016 mistakes? I think there are going to be teams that 100% do that. Don't know who they're going to be. I think that those things are probably going to happen. So I wonder if you could flip like Clarkson and, let's say you flip Clarkson and Henson, you take on like a little bit of money for 2021 and beyond, but you still get some cap space. I think that's kind of like a reasonable thing. And then I just wonder, like, what are you getting back in return? Like, I don't know if you're getting a first round pick. All it does take is one kind of desperate team to think Jordan Clarkson's their answer to do that, like the Cavs, you know, in LeBron's kind of last little run there. But I just will be very – I think this is just something that once we see how it plays out, and I think maybe the – maybe you're right in that, like, a trade demand or, like, the NBA being so competitive this year, one of these teams that's, like, in the title hunt or in the playoff hunt, like, goes all in and does something that gives Kobe Altman some leverage to work with.
Yeah, you truly never know in the NBA. A couple injuries here and there can just change the whole landscape of everything. So So we'll see. But yeah, it's definitely not the same as it was last year, where we had the expectation of, okay, we're going to be able to flip Hood. We're going to be able to flip, you know, Korver, and hopefully we're going to be able to, you know, recoup some picks there. It is a lot bleaker, especially when you start looking at like Knight's contract, but you know, you can definitely see a team talking themselves into Clarkson, especially if they can also get off some money too.
Who's the, in your mind, just kind of the most attractive piece that they might have to flip of those expirings?
I really do think it's Clarkson. I think that, you know, that playoff run in 2018 really didn't help things for him, because that was the first time he was really on the big stage and he did not look good. But, you know, every team could use a scorer off the bench, and Clarkson can be that scorer. And I believe, you know, I thought we saw some things last year that he improved on. He was, you know, arguably the Cavs' best player last year, considering he actually played, you know, more than 40 games.
What a bleak season.
Yeah, really. I thought about that at the end of last year, and I was like, who would get the Cavs MVP? And I was like, probably Jordan Clarkson, and that tells you everything you need to know about the season. But I really do think that, you know, there is a role for Clarkson out there on a good team. We even saw Hood contribute in the playoffs last year for Portland. There's no reason why Clarkson couldn't do something like that.
Yeah, I could see it. I think him or Tristan are sort of the ones, but I guess if Delly, or I'm sorry, if Henson's healthy, like maybe it's him, because he's a little cheaper, a little easier to flip him to a team than it might be if it's like Tristan, who's making like just a bunch more money. So I wonder if that kind of factors into it as well. But this will be interesting. We're going to be back tomorrow with another part of this two-part conversation. Again, find Jackson on Twitter at @Akron_Jackson. I'm on Twitter at @CWMWrites. The pod is on Twitter at @LockedOnCavs. Check out the whole best case, worst case thing we have going on at Through the Sword. Jackson, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you.
All right, guys, again, back tomorrow, and have a good Wednesday.